Namaste. Welcome to Dharma Reflections with Raghu Madurai. Today, we are going to look at solving multiple problems at the same time successfully. This is in continuation of our Practical Krishna series, where we take a quick insight into an incident in Krishna's life and try to extract as many practical pointers as possible and apply it in our daily lives. There is no difference between Krishna and us in the fact that we both face many problems, and sometimes we face many problems simultaneously. So it will be beneficial for us to look into the master's life, see his techniques, and try to learn as many as possible. The main difference, Krishna handles different problems with a perfect attitude, and that is what we are going to learn, the attitude and the techniques. At times when we are faced with many problems, we somehow manage it. But after many years, when we look at the same incident, we know with our hindsight that we could have done a lot better, a lot different. How about we bring this same understanding and calmness and analyze it using foresight and try to live in the now and solve the problems the right way? So when we look back, we can say that is the best anyone could have done. And this is true, especially when we are handling simultaneous problems of large proportions. So what we are going to do is take this piece of Krishna's life and put this piece of sugar cane between the rollers and repeatedly press it and extract as much as we can based on our limitations and enjoy this Krishna Leela Charanamrita. Today's episode is beginning in Mathura when Kala Yavana attacked. We already saw Jarasandha was a long-term problem for Krishna and Mathura. He had already attacked Mathura 17 times and each time with 23 Akshaunis. That's a colossal number, even if you take a single siege into account. But just like our Betal Pachisi stories, where both Vikrama and Betala are dug in and each one is not ready to give up, the same way Jarasandha was not ready to give up. He was ready to bring his 23 Akshauni for the 18th time. It will be in a couple of days before he showed up at the doorstep of Mathura. At that time, there was another powerful enemy, Kala Yavana. As the name sounds, he must have been from non-Sanatana Dharma lands, amassed a huge army. He was under the impression that he had no match. Narada Maharishi, wanting to play a role in Krishna's avatara, went and informed him about the prowess of Krishna and told him that he is a good match for him, as are the Yadavas. So he brought a 3 crore army at the doorstep. The same time, Krishna had one more personal obligation to give darshana to a bhakta. We will see him shortly. So with this near simultaneous attack of two very powerful foes, Krishna pondered about avoiding the loss of life on the part of Mathura. He got Vishwakarma to build a beautiful, well-planned city on an island called Dwarka. Vishwakarma is the architect for the Devas. The Lokapalas offered numerous treasures to kickstart this beautiful, brilliant city. Now Krishna, through yoga, transferred all the Mathura Nivasis to Dwarka. And then he appeared out of the gates of Mathura with a simple lotus garland, no weapons. He was dressed in his typical yellow silk robes. He had his Kaustubha and Srivatsa mark, very evident. He had his peacock feather. He even had his normally not seen forearms. So what happened? Kala Yavana, who was waiting there to attack, saw this individual match the description given by Narada and quickly understood it must be Krishna. Seeing him unarmed, he dropped whatever he had in his hands and started chasing Krishna. As he started chasing Krishna, Krishna feigned fear and started running in a very clumsy way. Imagine running with 4 arms. Kala Yavana was literally breathing down Krishna's neck. At every step, he thought he is going to catch him in the next step. This way, Krishna separated Kalayavana from his army and took him to a cave that was many yojanas away. As Krishna ran quickly into the cave, he went and hid in a corner. Kalayavana came into the darkness of the cave, saw a person lying down and seemed to be fast asleep. Without even using his head, how the person he was chasing is fast asleep. He thought it must be Krishna who is acting. So he kicked him hard. The sleepy person woke up and cast his gaze on Kalayavana, who was immediately reduced to ashes. Krishna then appeared in front of this just woken up person, Muchukunda, and his confusion only multiplied. He had no clue who was standing in front of him, why somebody got burnt to ashes, and what was his role. So many questions going in the mind of Muchukunda. This Muchukunda is of Ikshvaku dynasty. He is one of the ancestors of Rama. His grandfather was the great Yavanashva, and his father was Mandata. Muchukunda had participated in the Devasura Yuddha that happened during the time of Bhagavan Subramanya. When Kartikeya led Devas into a battle, Muchukunda had the privilege of fighting alongside. At the end of the war, he realized that due to the time differences between the Devas and the human plane, he had lost all his family, friends, relatives, and was left all alone. Faced with this double whammy, when the Devas asked him to seek a boon, all he could say was he was both physically and mentally tired and wanted to go to sleep. The Devas quickly gave that boon. As they had told him, he could ask anything except Kaivalya or Moksha, which is possible only from Mahavishnu. The Devas added to the same boon that anyone who disturbs Muchukunda, especially the first person, will be burnt to ashes. Krishna used this knowledge to his fullest potential. It is interesting to note that Krishna, despite showing his presence as Mahavishnu in classic form, starting from lotus garland to Sri Vatsa Mark and Kaustubha Mani, Muchukunda was unable to identify his own deity. Krishna gave a brief history of his avatara, told him why he was there. He also gave a brief idea about Muchukunda's devotion in the past. Krishna was in all praise of Muchukunda and asked him to seek a worthy boon. Having understood it was Vishnu who was gracing with his darshana, Muchukunda broke into a glorious hymn. He went on to explain the state of a bhakta's mind, and he sought nothing but Bhagavan's lotus feet. He lamented that the six enemies in the form of five senses and the manas were tormenting him, and only Bhagavan's lotus feet was his sole refuge. Krishna applauded Muchukunda for not falling into the classic trap of samsara. Most people, when confronted with the opportunity of such a boon, would stoop to materialistic pleasures. So Krishna was very happy to see this bhakta with his pure intention. Bhagavan also said that people who follow abstract disciplines like Sankhya, Yoga, etc., without having a personal emotional connection to Ishvara, always have the risk of not burning all the subtle tendencies and vasanas through their process, which waits for an opportunistic time to sprout and pull back. But in case of bhakta, there is an emotional bonding between Bhagavan and the bhakta, and the bhakta is not ready to accept anything other than Bhagavan or his lotus feet. So Krishna blessed that Muchukunda will have such a bhakti in all conditions. Bhakti is so exalted by great acharyas who open that Bhagavan is ready to give moksha easily but is reluctant to give unconditional bhakti, as it is considered to be even superior in the eyes of many acharyas. Krishna reminded Muchukunda that while he was a king, he killed killed many animals during hunting that had no connection to his Swadharma. Krishna suggested him to take the path of tapasya with his mind sheltered on him, to burn all these vasanas. Then to measure his spiritual growth, Krishna gives him a yardstick, and to become Sarvabhuta Sugrudatma, that means one who is concerned with the welfare of all living beings. The key thing is, it is not some like our relatives, spouse, kids, parents, etc., or the ones we like. And it is not for some time, it is at all times. This Sarvabhuta Hita is a concept which Krishna elaborates it in detail later in Bhagavad Gita for Arjuna. So, having cleansed his vasanas in the next birth, with his mind locked onto Krishna and all his vasanas burnt through tapasya, Krishna assures Muchukunda that he will attain Kaivalya, moksha. Muchukunda was very, very happy. He prostrated Krishna and left the cave and went in a northerly direction. He reached Gandhamadana mountain, stayed there with his heart firmly fixated on Krishna. He engaged in deep tapas. His mind was rooted in Shraddha, firm and devoid of any attachments, physical or mental. And he had no doubts. It is very important that all these characteristics are very critical for every sadhaka. He then went to Badrikashrama, the place where Nara and Narayana themselves meditated. He did focused tapasya to overcome the dvandvas, the opposites, heat and cold, honor and dishonor. The world is filled with this pair of opposites. Having overcome, he was filled with peace. Krishna went back to destroy the leaderless Yavana army and demolish them. He then had his small band of army cart all the spoils of the war and head towards Dwaraka. Meanwhile, Jarasandha reached the place and Krishna started running away, dropping all the things and acting as if he was afraid. We will pause the story here because we already saw what happens in the Jarasandha episode. And let us turn our gaze and start understanding the nectar of practical management we can extract from this episode. To understand Krishna from this perspective is to benefit our daily living. The first thing we learn from this episode is how and why to prioritize. Krishna had two important enemies, very powerful, on his doorstep. He also had the situation where many innocent Mathuravasis could be caught in the crossfire. So he focused on the first task of getting Dwaraka ready and transporting all the citizens to the island. While approaching any problem or issue, keeping the priority on our hands is the first order of things. And this is a very basic lesson in any project management, whether it is our house or work. Knowing the priorities and tackling them in a sequence will always get us beneficial results. The second takeaway is to break the big problem into smaller parts. Krishna had this multi-layered problem of near simultaneous attack of two powerful enemies. Knowing that Jarasandha was a day or two behind from joining Kalayavana, he used that opportunity to his advantage. Same way, to deal with Kalayavana, instead of challenging his entire army right up front, he lured him away, appearing as unarmed. Once he dealt with Kalayavana at the cave using Muchukunda and the knowledge about his past, he quickly returned back to deal with the Yavana army. Once that army was vanquished and destroyed, he was ready to face Jarasandha. In this way, we take a big problem, break it into small parts, have a sequence or a priority, and then approach it. The next takeaway is efficiency, multitasking, and timing. While Kalayavana was showing up, Krishna wanted to also give darshana to his bhakta. He also wanted to take care of two things at two different ends of the spectrum, getting rid of Kalayavana and blessing Muchukunda at the same time. And even this timing was beautifully precise. If Kalayavana took a long time not to come out of the cave, as did Krishna, then the Yavana army could have started sending a search patrol. So Krishna had to time his stay at the cave before returning back to the Yavana forces and dealing with them. He also had to clean up the Yavana army, which had come in huge numbers, before a possible collusion with Jarasandha's massive army. So we have this wonderful example of efficiency, multitasking and timing from this episode. The next takeaway for us is learning how to motivate others. Krishna lured Kalayavana knowing his psychology. If Krishna had appeared with his gada and chakra, Kalayavana would have started the war right away. But as Krishna appeared unarmed, he was motivated to follow suit. We know from modern brain science, this is called mirroring of neurons, that we tend to mirror either the feelings, actions of another person. Another interesting aspect of motivation is how Kalayavana felt when he was chasing Krishna. Bhagavatam says, Hastapraptam Ivatmanam Harina Sa Pade Pade. That means he was matching Krishna's step, and at every step he felt that next step he would place the hands on Krishna. For argument's sake, if Krishna was a tad slower, he would have risked being caught and the fight would have begun right there itself, not in the cave. On the other hand, if Krishna ran too fast, Kalayavana could have been dejected. He could have returned back to bring the army. The most important lesson for anyone wanting to motivate others is to ensure that the other person feels that the goal is within their grasp. Now, this could be a self-motivation or motivating our children or anybody else. If the goal or the motivating factor is not existent or not challenging enough, if the goal is way within our comfort zone, then there is no motivating factor to go after it. On the other hand, if the motivating factor is way beyond our stretch zone, then it has no impact on the mind of the person who wants to be benefited. Just like a small baby that is learning to walk is first learning to stand holding something, eventually takes a few steps, and the parents make a big deal out of it. Slowly, the toddler starts moving without any support, and then it starts taking steps further and further. Eventually, it learns how to run. The child may eventually go and win an Olympic gold medal, but that is not the goal for the baby, which is broken down into small bite-sized steps. So we learn this wonderful practical example from Krishna on how to motivate others. The next takeaway for us is to overcome tamas. We see Kalayavana completely buried in tamas, losing out his reasoning and kicking Muchukunda, only to perish. Muchukunda was a bhakta of Mahavishnu, yet he is unable to recognize Vishnu or Krishna in front of him because of his deep slumber. He is overcome with doubts as to who this deity is and starts asking him all sorts of questions. The lesson for us is we need to work on the percentage of our tamas and convert it into sattva. We also get quite a few spiritual pointers. Let's go over a few of them. The most important one being, just because one sees Krishna in front, that doesn't mean all the karma phalas have already fructified. Muchukunda is being advised by Krishna to go and spend time in tapasya to burn all the karma phalas and vasanas he had accumulated during hunting. He even assured him that it will be possible in the next janma to burn all his vasanas. Contrast this with the idea of many desert cults that say, just sign up and all your sins are paid for. If you don't, you'll be burning in hell forever. A person with dharmic understanding and logical thinking can easily understand that one must work on their own karma, karmaphala, and vasanas. There are a variety of ways to burn them through karma yoga, bhakti, jnana, but it takes tapasya, sadhana on the individual's part and taking personal responsibility. Bhagavan only assures the end result. He leaves everything to our actions. This universe, prapancha, has been set with certain dharma and everyone is subject to it. Bhagavan's grace can give us the immunity when we are moving around in samsara. He can help us to strengthen our bhakti and jnana. But we still need to work through our karma phala and vasanas. The next big lesson we can get from Muchukunda episode is the bhakti and sadhana which Muchukunda did long ago took time to fructify. Despite his long tamas, he got the darshana of Krishna. When Krishna asked him to seek a boon, his viveka came to the fore. He did not ask any material blessing, but instead his mind was already locked onto the highest goal of Kaivalya. Let us recall that he was lamenting through his hymn that his biggest enemies were the five senses and the manas, which were dragging him in different directions. Krishna gave the assurance to this wonderful bhakta that his true wealth, which is his spiritual wealth in the form of bhakti and jnana, will be preserved and he will build on it. The gravest fear for any sadhaka is a fall back into the sensory samsara. Krishna cautions, for this yuga, bhakti has to be part of sadhana. If one were to do mere spiritual practices like many new age babas prescribe, it is a recipe for spiritual disaster. Many new age babas recommend not reading or studying Vedas, Upanishads, Gita, Itihasa Puranas, but they take all their ideas from it, repackage and rebrand it to sell as their original. Such a travesty will lead the so-called followers deeper into a spiritual quagmire. Krishna hints Muchukunda that the mind is already used to the sensory objects, and since it is already used to that direction, using bhakti, which also uses the same sensory objects, but to be trained on a superior goal, Ishta Devata. And this piggyback on the same process, except changing the direction, changing the goal, is a very powerful way and a sure shot way to extricate the manas. Once the manas turns the direction and listens to buddhi, which is locked onto the lotus feet of Paramatma, it starts making rapid progress. In this way, bhakti helps one develop right jnana and viveka, and it also teaches one the differences between material entrapments and Paramatma. The last thought we are going to dwell on is Krishna's excellent yardstick to measure our spiritual progress. If a person is very selfish and thinks about I, me, myself only, such an individual is at the lowest rung of his potential. Most of us have graduated to the next level to include our family, our friends, relatives, objects of our liking. This may look like a grand step. It is still holding on to the same ahankara of I. As one gets more sattvic and expands their kindness and compassion and prosperity for all living beings, one steps into the realm of Sarva Bhuta Sugurdatma. Bhagavan Krishna stresses this in Bhagavad Gita also. In many places, in chapter 5, Bhagavad Gita, he tells, one who realizes that Bhagavan is the real enjoyer of all sacrifices and austerities, and that Bhagavan is the Lord of all the worlds and a friend of all living beings, such a person is said to be realized. So Krishna wants us to dwell on the unity behind the diversity of different living beings under different conditions. When we see The Paramatma in every living being, whether it is a friend or foe, whether it is a person of our liking or the one who instills fear or inspires hate in us, we start looking at that Paramatma and start evolving with maturity to seek that presence everywhere. And hence, Krishna sets this as the highest culmination point of bhakti and jnana. Such a person is very much ready for attaining kaivalya or moksha. In other words, Vaikuntha, may we all strive our best to imbibe this wonderful quality of sarva bhuta suhrudatma and see Paramatma in every living being and not see them as a body, mind or buddhi. And that starts by first understanding who we are. If we cannot understand who we really are, we obviously cannot realize who others are. May Krishna's grace, his words and his life continue to inspire us. May our sadhana help us to break this deep dark tamas and replace it with sattva. May we focus on Paramatma's lotus feet. Om Tat Sat.